Hello, I'm Jeff Watts. Welcome to Advances in Eye Care. In this edition, we'll be discussing developments in neurological and retinal health assessment and management. We'll be looking at both traditional and recently developed retinal screening techniques and their use in disease diagnosis, and focusing on how these tests may lead to an earlier diagnosis of central nervous system diseases such as Alzheimer's. But to begin with, we look at a screening technique for the early detection of primary open-angle glaucoma. Glaucoma affects 60 million people in the world, with 6 million of these suffering severe visual impairment in both eyes. Earlier detection and medical intervention is important to improve the patient's long-term prognosis. Optometrists are used to working with a variety of techniques in detecting patients at risk of developing glaucoma, such as field assessment, disc analysis, and tonometry. A new technique has recently been developed at University College London, which is said to detect changes in cellular structure that may reveal glaucoma at a much earlier stage than is possible with more traditional approaches. Professor Francesca Cordiero leads the Glaucoma and Retinal Neurodegenerative Disease Research Group at UCL. Her team is behind the latest developments in using the technique known as detection of apoptosing retinal cells, or DARC. She discusses this innovative early glaucoma test and where it's headed with our interviewer, Serge Miodragovic.
Hi, Francesca. Welcome to the show. For context, could you walk us through what the current glaucoma tests are and what the issue with these was that led to the need for a new diagnostic system?
The AirPuff test suffers from the fact that you rely on the air pressing on the front of the eye, and there are confounding factors such as how genetically your front of your eye is made. So the thicker the front of the eye, you get a very falsely high reading. So it's artificially high because the air has to work harder to compress the front of the eye. However, we know that there are patients who have very high pressures who do not develop glaucoma. These are called the ocular hypertensives. And similarly, we know that there are patients with very low pressures in their eye who do develop glaucoma. And these are called the low tension glaucoma. So the use of pressure by itself in the eye is no longer being used as a way of defining whether or not your patient actually has the disease. The tests that are routinely done to assess whether or not your patient has glaucoma are simply looking at the back of the eye to see if the shape of the nerve, the optic nerve at the back of the eye, has changed. And that can be recorded photographically with just a fundus camera, or it can be measured and you can use OCT, optical coherence tomography, or scanning laser ophthalmoscopy to give you more objective measurements of the shape of the optic nerve. And the third test that is increasingly used is that of visual fields. So visual fields are basically the way that measures the integrity of the nerve cells in the eye that really subserve this whole pathway, the retinal ganglion cells. And we know that in glaucoma, it's these cells that are killed off. The visual field test measures the function of those retinal ganglion cells by posing different stimuli to a patient on a sort of space invader type test.
What was the issue with these that led to the new diagnostic system? What was the need?
So, well, firstly, regarding the pressure, as I've said, it isn't the most reliable measure of whether a patient actually has disease or not. So that's why the other two things, such as looking at the nerve shape, as well as looking at the visual field, came into play. But the gold standard remains the visual field. And we know now from a number of studies, both looking at the histology from people's eyes, as well as looking at primate models, that actually before the standard visual field test detects any abnormality, you need to have lost between 30 and 50% of your retinal nerve cells. I mean, that's quite a large number of retinal ganglion cells to be lost. Mm-hmm. And the worrying thing is that actually extrapolates to like a 10-year delay. So when you start losing your retinal ganglion cells to when you've got to around 30 to 50%, it's believed to be 10 years. Now, we know the problem with that, and that's true for any neurodegenerative disease, is the later you identify this process of degeneration of your nerve cells, the later you start treatment and the less your chances of stopping functional loss occurring in the first place. So ideally, if you could identify patients much earlier, they would never lose vision in the first place.
So could you describe for us the step-by-step process for DARC? What does it involve?
Sure. So DARC takes advantage of the fact that you have clear optical media, and as such, you could almost regard the back of the eye, the retina, as a tissue culture plate of cells. So the way the actual technology works, it identifies the six cells at the back of your eye using a fluorescent tag. So step by step, it's a little bit like a fluorescein angiogram. You inject the dye, which has got the fluorescent label on it, into the vein of a patient. And within minutes to hours later, you can actually see the fluorescent tag lighting up and highlighting those cells that are sick at the back of the eye. So through this process, what we actually think we are able to do is identify the end organ of disease. So in glaucoma, we know it is the sick retinal ganglion cells, the apoptosing retinal ganglion cells that herald the disease process. And if you can pick these up, you can gauge the activity of the disease and the disease severity and tailor your treatment to try and compensate for this.
What pitfalls, if any, would you say, or shortcomings, does DARC methodology have?
Well, it's early days to be absolutely sure. I think in the larger scheme of things, the first thing would be not everyone can give an intravenous injection. Certainly, if we're trying to put this onto the high street as an intravenous delivery, it's not ideal. And something that we are developing is a topical non-invasive version, which will make it eminently suitable to be administered on the high street and to be given by optometrists as well as people who are technically qualified and who can do retinal imaging. So I think that is one pitfall or one potential issue. However, we're already halfway there. We've already got this topical version getting ready to be taken up further. The other would be, I think initially in the world of glaucoma, we could say because of the pattern of the distribution of these six cells that you may be able to say this is glaucomatous disease. But we do know that there are other diseases that manifest in the eye, which this test will not necessarily initially diagnose. It may diagnose glaucoma, but these other diseases, it could say that there's something abnormal going on, but it won't necessarily tell you whether it is, for example, Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease or something like that. And you may need a second level of tests. Mm-hmm. But in terms of using it as a screening procedure, it will be a very easy way of doing it and perhaps detect things much earlier than is currently possible, but perhaps more attractively when you're talking about diseases of the CNS, is you can use the eye as a way of monitoring non-invasively the results of your treatment. So we have certainly shown in preclinical models that we can detect the success of treatments using the same technique, using the eye, when actually what we're treating is the brain, be it the substantia nigra and striatum in Parkinson's disease or something like the hippocampus in Alzheimer's disease. And that's a very exciting part of this program. Mm,
indeed. So I have so far understood that DARC allows for diagnosis before symptoms begin to present, which is obviously very exciting.
Well, to be honest, patients hardly ever complain of glaucoma symptoms unless their disease is incredibly well advanced. One of the reasons for that is our brains are very good at filling in. So for example, we know that in assessing visual field with the sort of work that has been done at City University at the moment, the brain is, where it can't really see anything, it makes it up. So the patient doesn't necessarily realize that they've lost their visual field, and that in a way is quite frightening. In a very advanced disease, classically in something like glaucoma, you have a very small constricted area where you're able to see, and that you'd be obviously aware of because you wouldn't be able, for example, to walk down the steps very easily or look above you very easily. So you'd be aware that your field of vision is small. But most of the times, to be honest, patients do not know. And that's one of the reasons why glaucoma in particular is called the silent thief of sight, because it is asymptomatic. However, having said that, the sort of things that one would envisage is that those patients who have a family history, so they have a first degree relative who is affected by glaucoma, those are the patients who currently come to an optometrist because they are offered free sight tests by the government. This sort of test may reduce the chances of them spending hours coming to clinic to be screened, because you can tell very easily whether or not there's any disease activity being present. Additionally, those patients who you wouldn't normally see in the hospital, but who have just come for, you know, getting their glasses checked, you can offer this as a screening methodology, which is painless, but provides a lot of information as to whether they are well. So the sort of well-manned screening clinic that you're talking about on the high street. But those would be the sort of targets that one would go for. And then over and above that, if you're talking about using this as a surrogate marker for disease treatment, then you're moving either to your GP or to your hospital clinic where that treatment has been given, and where this could be used to check for whether your treatment is working in the first place.
You have been quoted as suggesting that future development of DARC might include the use of a topical drop application. I think you've mentioned it. Is this likely? And if so, what are the challenges of developing this?
Well, we've already started developing this, actually, and we have one formulation that we've already shown experimentally works pretty well. We foresee that we should be able, within the next 5 years, to get it to the patient, even sooner, perhaps, depending on how much investment we have in this idea. So if you had asked me this even 1 year ago, I would have been a little pessimistic about the timelines, but now we have something, and we have a methodology in terms of manufacturing it. I don't think it's unrealistic to say that within 5 years we should have something.
Further studies are also being carried out to see whether DARC can apply to other neurodegenerative conditions such as Alzheimer's disease. What specifically about DARC makes it so applicable to these other conditions?
So the main focus of DARC is picking up cells that are sick in the retina, and the retina basically is part of the brain. It's in the visible part of the brain, but it is still part of the brain. So cells that are affected in the brain have a mirrored pathology in the retina, and that's increasingly being recognized. So for example, we've mentioned the OCT already, which provides a optical histology section, as you were, of the back of the eye. We do know that in diseases such as Parkinson's, and in fact even in Alzheimer's, OCT, looking at retinal thickness, is already being used as a surrogate for some clinical trials of those diseases. So it's already recognised, therefore, that in neurodegeneration, the retina is affected. And what DARC offers is a little bit more of a sensitive, objective measure, because you're getting to the stage of single cell analysis. None of these other technologies allow you to assess disease at a single cell level. And what's fascinating about dark is it does do that. You can see the number of single sick cells that are present in the retina at any one stage, and that gives you an objective measure. And if you're talking about something like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, it may well reflect that the changes that you see from your treatment, and we've shown this preclinically, is very similar and reflects earlier the changes that eventually happen in the brain. So again, dark offers a tool that other technologies do not really have a handle on.
Would you say you foresee dark becoming a widespread testing mechanism in the future? For example, by community optometrists using a drop formulation and imaging system? And do you think it could replace current methods of examination?
Well, I think I've already described before why I think it is imminently possible to imagine that it could be a screening tool. However, my one warning here would be none of this can happen until dark is validated. So I've been talking about this very optimistically. However, we have to prove first that dark does what it says, and we need large scale, multi-center trials to do that. And we are in the midst of trying to organize that. So with that proviso, that is, you have to validate it. I do not foresee, assuming all the validatory tests and trials are successful, I do not foresee it as a problem to actually farm it out so that it is available to everybody, to your community optometrist, to your high street optician.
Thank you, Francesca and Serge.